Bring home the zombie. Take out Barry. What's up? Welcome to episode 143 of
Zombie Ticket,
the B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And no listener submitted or news this week, so we're just going to jump straight into the movie. And it is from, and I'm going to go with 2012 on this one, since that's when it became widely available. It's anywhere between 2010 and 2012. Lots of film festival stuff. And it is Beyond the Black Rainbow, which of course brings us to the impromptu plot summary.
Well, brought to you, well, we kind of have a real sponsor this week. For Chicago craft shows, if you are into something new, interesting, and independent, it's called the Urban Folk Circuit. Go to urbanfolkcircuit.com and check out where they're popping up in the city of Chicago soon.
And by Noriega Fine Custom Leathers, for the drug-addled psychotic murderer in all of us.
And also sponsored by Slow-Mo. If you look at things in slow-mo long enough, if they're just standing real still, they can become as freaky as hell.
Oh, yeah. And I've been waiting for this.
I can sum this up simply. Just, you know, picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. As someone calls you, you answer quite slowly. It's a girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
The Shatner impression?
I know. Okay, so we begin the film in 1983. And at first I'm like, is this a period piece? No, because I mean, I really didn't know what year this was out or anything.
Did you watch the trailer before this?
No.
Oh, so you had no idea what to expect.
No. I just walked into this blind and it was like, wow. So yes, it starts in 1983 with the cheesy digital, you know, futuristic for back then, digital numbering. And I think it only lasted, the illusion of it being a period piece or actually being an old movie from back then did not last long, of course, because there are like some things that were just way ahead of that time, film-wise.
Yeah. The film stock was obviously modern.
Right,
but
right.
I think that's about it. He did pretty well with that.
Yeah, the soundtrack was not obnoxious enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
He hit it perfectly in tone in it, but it just needed to be more impressed with itself that it was using keyboards as they would have back then.
Yeah. Think Warriors.
Yes. Wow, we're using keyboards, man. All right, so we're in 1983. Actually, the beginning of the movie, it opens up with an ad to this institute about finding yourself. And then...
Better living through chemistry, basically.
Yeah, and the guy is this crazy combination between Batman... I can't remember, I'm drawing a blank on the actor's name that plays Batman for
Christian
some
reason.
Christian Bale and Crispin Glover.
Interesting. See, I've... Saw something on the IMDb forums that mentioned Christian Bale. I never noticed it until they pointed it out, and it is really close. He could be Christian Bale's older brother.
Yeah, he could be. Although that was the same guy. That wasn't Barry in the beginning.
No, that was I can't remember the actor's name, but that's Dr. Arborio, who he's later in the movie, much older.
Who's much more Crispin Glover.
Oh, definitely.
Christian Bale. And he talks about, you know, finding yourself, and so then you actually see this institution that he's talking of, and it gets very Kubrick. I can't wait to talk about what he did with color in the very beginning with this to separate everything. But there's the mental patient who cannot talk, or just chooses not to, and this creepy ass doctor who just stares at her. And that's pretty much the beginning of the movie for about the first, what, half hour, would you
Roughly.
say?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some random lights, some goddamn crystals. He really hit it perfectly. I mean, yeah, it's the early 80s, so you have to have crystals. And then you find out a bit more about this guy and you know, his home life, which he's just kind of sleepwalking through. But then when it gets to a flashback.
1966.
66. And that shit gets real.
Yeah.
No, you can't even say it gets real. We're going to try to describe this to you, this scene, several times this episode. You're going to know exactly what's going to happen.
And
And
you're still
why.
not going to be ready for it.
Right, if you have not watched this movie yet, you're still not going to be prepared for it. In fact, you probably have already watched the movie. You'll hear our description and then watch it again and still would not be prepared for it.
Last week when I said it was really fucking creepy, that's the part I was talking about.
Yeah, it's well, I won't get into the way it was shot or anything again. I'll just talk plot
We'll
summary.
get to that later.
He pretty much takes this acid trip in the earth or a tar pit of some sort. I'm not sure what this
Nobody's
black
really sure of it.
substance was that he went down into on acid.
The general consensus is black goo or tar. Some
Yeah.
have suggested blood because the way that scene is shot, there's no real color to it.
I don't think it's blood. I guess it's tough to tell without any color in it. And then when he emerges from this, they mention, you know, that's one plot detail maybe I won't give away is what happens when he does when he comes
Well,
out of.
yes, that might be best to save.
Yeah, so he comes out of it. You understand a bit more about him. And no, wow, you kind of thought he was creepy or fucked up before then. And then they take that, you realize he's really no longer human. He's this monster, literally a green-eyed monster at the end of the film.
Well, no, it's actually green.
Yeah.
Was it green? Okay, I just thought it was black.
You know what? It started with Freeman Eyes from Dune, the whole blue, you know, and you know, no white of the eye. And then when he was driving around looking for her because she escapes, they are glowing in green,
Yeah, you're okay.
and he's literally a green-eyed monster.
But you mentioned she escaped. Let's just roll back. When he comes out of the tar pit, let's just call it that, an infant is put into the tar pit who you find out is the girl in the asylum.
Oh, right. Yeah, so you just understand her a bit more.
Oh, and we forgot to mention she's kind of psychic.
Yeah, you kind of get the feeling that both of them are.
Specifically telepathic and telekinetic. She definitely is. There's question about him.
Right. He's not as gifted as she is.
If at all.
Right.
He can receive, but that's about it, is what they've established.
Yeah. And I think we could say, well, there's
He
one
makes
more.
the complete transformation into the green-eyed monster. She attempts an escape, and hilarity ensues.
Yeah, hilarity ensues.
Figured I'd give you a little assist there. I first found out about this last March when Trailer Clash reviewed the trailer, and I was desperate to see it from there. It, like you said, perfectly cops the sort of late 70s, early 80s sci-fi look.
Yeah.
Kubrick, you mentioned, a lot of people compare it to Kubrick.
Oh, definitely.
I kind of like to think of it as a THX 1138's evil twin.
Yes, I was thinking a lot of THX.
And this one is on a very short and fairly recent list for me of movies that I'm glad I saw that were great, but I don't know that I ever want to see again. Right there with Winter's Bone and Red State.
I definitely would like to see this one again, because I mean,
This thing creeps me the fuck out.
Oh yeah, it is probably, I mean, the dude that plays Barry, probably one of the creepiest performances you're ever gonna see.
I really want to see him in another role just to see if he brings that to everything or if he just nailed it perfectly.
Well, in fact, guess who played an observer on Fringe?
Really? Oh,
Yes.
I have to look for that episode.
Because he pretty much he turns into an observer almost.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, he has got the weird outfit, the bald head, and a lot of the mannerisms.
Yeah. I mean, aside from the speaking and, the specific quirks of the observers, it's that detached, slow motion sort of thing that they do.
Right.
And another thing that made this really creepy at the beginning, and it's a subtle, well, it's not subtle, but I didn't notice it till this time, or at least didn't notice that that's what was creeping me out. There's a, the first, at the beginning when you get the commercial for the Arboria Institute, he's looking dead at the camera. And then when the credits come in, you get a close up on an eye. And then the credits end and you get a close up on her eye. And everybody's
Ah.
looking dead at the camera.
Oh.
And that's when you look dead at a camera, it gets creepy. That's why actors are told never look in the camera. Aside from breaking the whole fourth wall thing. And also, Michael Rogers is his name, who played Barry,
Yes.
did an amazing job of, at showing this sort of seething rage at the beginning. Before he even makes the transformation and he's just straight up rage incarnate, he's trying to be this, kind of slimy, 70s psychiatrist.
He's trying to be very suave, but
Yeah.
you sense he's brooding and just angry
And
and.
that's what gets me, is he's trying to play it very low key, but there's just a seething rage.
Yeah. I mean, this is this guy's first film, this guy that made this. And how did he get.
He was actually the second unit assistant video operator on Tombstone back in 93 or
Right.
94, and then he does this, and now he's shooting a documentary.
And gets this performance
Yeah.
from this guy. I mean, it's just insane. The
And I
stuff
also
they
got
did.
to credit Eva Allen, who played the girl.
Yeah.
She has one line in the movie. It's not even said on camera, but it's a brilliant performance.
Did she not play the mother too, or no?
I don't think so. No, she didn't.
Okay.
But she doesn't say a word, but you're completely with her, and you completely buy all of it.
Yeah. And just the stuff he does with color. More than anything
We need
else.
to talk about all the red.
Well, he uses red for the interrogation and for any sort of use of technology or something that they're going
Yeah.
to do in the institute. Her cell is this icy blue, and you just it just you feel like you're alone, with her. And then, of course, he. Abruptly, intrudes and it becomes red. There's a lot of abrupt changes that just kind of jar you out.
There's the abrupt change in color. There's also a lot of points where the music cue gets cut
Right.
off.
I love that. Love that. The music cue, it's just, this great big swell and then meow. And then he's speeding off home. And of course, once you're out of the institute, the lighting is much more natural, like a the like sort of an orangey,
Yeah.
yellowy kind of light when he goes home or when he's driving home, when you're outside.
That's the one thing I think was kind of unnecessary. And then it's hard for me to say anything's unnecessary in this movie because Panos Cosmatos is his name, the director. He
Yeah.
was incredibly economical.
Yeah.
He only showed you what you needed to see. Except for the driving scenes. And the one driving scene at the end when he's hunting her down was necessary because you see how insane he is.
Right.
But the two times he goes home, you don't really need to see him driving. You don't really get anything out of it, I don't think.
Not really, but just, I mean, it's a break from the institute.
Yeah, true.
And then he's crossing into this other world that, should be normal, but he's just so far gone. So broken. But however, is it time to talk about the motherlode?
Well, actually, before we get to that, I have one more scene that I really liked that I didn't notice until this time. I've seen this now two and change times. After the first time I saw it, I had to watch a couple of scenes. Actually, I had to watch about, I'd say, 40% of the movie just to wrap my head around it. And I mean right after I finished it the first time. There's a nurse in the institute, the only other employee, as far as we can tell, at least living employee. She happens upon this diary of his, or the document, as it's called in the credits,
Yeah.
that basically details a lot of what he's done to Elena, the girl, and a lot of other things that nobody else is supposed to know about.
Right. Ever.
Niall, Barry, the doctor, finds out about it because of some cigarette ash in the drawer that the book was in. Then he basically sets Elena up to kill her. He has Elena
Yeah.
knock her off because he had earlier slipped her this picture of her mother, basically trying to win her over. And he has the nurse go in and take it from her. And while she's taking it from her, he turns down this pyramid, which is basically what they're using to suppress her powers. And it's this big glass pyramid with the smoke emanating from it.
Crystals.
Yeah, it's basically a crystal. I didn't think of it that way, but yeah, fucking crystals.
But that's how a movie like back then would have been
Yeah,
made
yep.
with them, though.
But it suppresses her power, but so while the nurse is in there taking away the picture, he turns down the pyramid.
Right.
And Elena makes her head explode, literally.
And he just gives you a snippet. I mean, he doesn't glorify it or revel in it. You just kind of see it just for half a second, but you know what happened. And when I was first watching a lot of my notes are just kind of like, what the fuck's going on, trying to figure this thing out. And of course, I'm like, did he set her up? Did she do it? Did he do it? I mean,
And I love the pyramid music.
yeah.
It's this organ and electric guitar thing that's very proggy. Loved it. And in the intro, it's music over the credits. Anyway, one other scene before we get to the flashback. He gets a phone call while he's at home.
Oh, yeah.
This odd sounding kind of robotic electronic voice, in quotes.
It's pretty much a fax machine.
Yeah, it sounds like a fax machine or a modem, but there are words in there if you listen closely.
Yeah.
They kind of mixed some altered dialogue, affected dialogue with the modem sounds. He tries to dial out after he gets the call, looks under his desk, and the phone is unplugged. Which I think is the first thing in the movie that makes you kind of have to think about it. Because everything before then, as odd as it is fairly straightforward.
So then what the fuck was that?
I always thought of it as an hallucination.
Yeah.
Some have suggested it was the Sentinels, the robot guards at the institution, psychically telling him that Elena was of the possibility that Elena would escape. Hence, he tries to dial out. He finds out the phone is unplugged, and when he looks under the desk to see the phone unplugged, there's a shot that really foreshadows the ending.
What,
The very end of the movie. What happens to him? He's almost in the same pose. We'll get to that. Yeah, like we said, we're spoiling everything.
Yeah, it's not about what really happens in the movie. It's about how just getting through it.
How that phone call came in with the phone unplugged is your first point, the first time you think, okay, this is not going to make sense. Because really, everything up until then does make sense.
Oh, and it's Christian Bale meets Christopher Lee.
Okay, that's better than Glover, yeah. The old guy is more Glover. Yeah, I can definitely see that now. And then he goes back to the hospital. He visits Dr. Arborea, the former head of the institute, who is now drug-addled and comatose practically, barely awake, watching old movies.
Well, yeah, then you realize he's about to push off.
And as Barry's about to help him push off, and I do think that was intentional, I do think he killed him.
Oh, yeah.
You get a flashback scene.
Boy, do you get a flashback scene. Now, the stereotypical drug thing is to have lots of colors and you know, flashy things
Ooh, the
for
colors.
a drug flashback. Not this fucking movie.
No.
This guy, I think he invented, it's almost white and white.
Yeah, it's almost completely washed out white, except for very small details. You see eyes in the characters and mouths. That's about it.
Yeah.
As they're talking to Barry, and he takes some, Barbaria's wife, Anna, drops a couple of drops of liquid on his tongue. Of course, we can assume it's acid.
Right.
Then he goes into the pit.
What that pit is? I don't know.
It could be blood, could be tar, could be, who knows. Now, I had always looked at this scene literally until I saw, again, on the IMDb forum. I spent a good chunk of today on the IMDb forum for this movie, just trying to get other people's takes on it. I'm trying to get some help in, you know, my own analysis.
It's hard to take it literally because of the third eye image.
Yeah.
Reminds me a lot of Peter Gabriel's Shock the Monkey video, actually.
And, yeah, kind of.
He was just a bit more lit, and he was silver.
Barry goes into this pool, and this is the only color in the scene, and it's ooh, the colors and very psychedelic, and pretty much a vision of hell.
Yeah.
Comes out of the pit, first tries to sexually assault Anna, Barry's wife, and then bites her jugular.
I'm trying to remember if you see the blood.
You do.
You do see that red.
Do you see? No, I don't see it as, it's not red. It looks almost clear at first, and then it's black. That's not red either. There is no other color in that scene.
So maybe that was a pit of blood.
It could have been.
Yeah. He really leaves it up to you.
Yeah. Now, someone's on the IMDb forum said it's all symbolic and it's not meant to be taken literally. Which helps me a lot because it's still, my theory makes sense at that point. Because I had thought that his eyes changed and he lost his hair when he got out of the pit.
I thought so too, yeah.
First time you see it, it seems that way.
Yeah.
He still had all his hair. Now the eyes, it's hard to tell. He just got out of a pit of some kind of dark, thick substance.
Yeah.
And they may have just been covered.
Hmm.
So he may have still been physically normal when he got out of the pit. Point is, you can almost say that there's nothing supernatural happening in the movie, aside from Molina's powers.
Right.
Which I kind of like, because then it means he's just completely drug-addled. And all of this came from basically too much benign pharmacology.
Well, right. They show in the beginning that he's taking his happy pills.
And as I took it, they were keeping down the monster.
Yeah. And he must have gotten off his meds.
Mm-hmm. So we get the flashback scene, and then they put Elena in the pool, and that's the last thing you see in that scene is the fluid closing in on her.
And I mean, that's really what this could be, and just a simplistic version of it would just be a guy went off his meds.
Yeah. Then you come back to him injecting Dr. Arborea, who had asked him to help him with his medicine.
Yeah.
Arborea immediately dies. Elena senses his death. They have a nice split screen of the two of them. And that's when shit gets real. That's actually when shit gets real, because the flashback is just weird.
Yes.
That's just backstory to explain things. It really kicks into high gear when Arborea dies.
And, I mean, it's a slow build-up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we thought last week's movie was a slow build-up. This week is gleefully slow, though.
Yeah.
It just absolutely trips over itself to be as slow as fucking possible.
And
until you're just screaming, like, come on, do something!
This is what I was curious about, because I love that. I love 2001. I love a lot of that 70s sci-fi that has that pacing.
Mm-hmm.
You, as you've said before, don't like 2001.
Nah.
What did you think of that pacing in this case?
I loved it. This was mesmerizing.
Yeah,
I mean,
it really sets the mood. And if you don't buy into the mood of this movie, you're sunk.
2001, I felt there was just there was slow-mo shots of things, floating. There was just a lot of hum, kind of No, he intentionally stirs the pot very slowly. Like I said, the whole putting things in slow motion when something is just sitting there and staring. And the reason why, the only way you know it's in slow motion is if you see the way their hair moves. Then you're like, oh,
I actually
okay.
have to pay closer attention to that. Maybe I'll have to watch it again.
Yeah, it just being creepy as hell.
Yeah.
2001 lacked that creepiness.
Oh, yeah. Well, 2001 wasn't intended to be creepy for the most part.
Ah.
A few scenes here and there, but.
Oh, the computer taking
Oh,
over,
how? That part was meant to be kind of creepy, but not creepy on this level.
But nowhere near it. It was Santa Claus Conquers the Martians next to this.
Yeah. So he goes home after he possibly kills Arboria. And,
And then becomes an observer.
well, before that,
Okay.
they kind of, Cosmatos, the director, in a very underhanded way explains why Alina is in the Institute. At least I think he does. He gets home, and his wife is watching a speech by Ronald Reagan about nuclear disarmament and about the Cold War and the problems with the Russians at the time. And that's when I realized she's being weaponized.
I thought in the beginning she was being weaponized. But I don't know. Now it just seems like he was jealous of her.
Well, there were other factors, but she was there because she was going to be used as a weapon. His relationship with her is another story.
Yeah.
There's a million ways to look at that. Was he obsessed with her? Well, clearly he was obsessed, but was it a romantic, sexual thing? Did he see himself as her father? That gets all kinds of messy.
But she's the better product. I mean, if you think about it, think about that flashback scene. He was supposed to bring home the mother load, and be this.
Be this elevated human.
Right. And instead, it's what she is.
That's when I think, again, watching it so many times, I think I've come to the conclusion that's the point of the movie. And we'll
But
get to this more at the end.
the thing was, he would never, ever let her out of there.
No.
Even to be a weapon.
Yeah, that's true.
It just would never happen.
Yeah.
I mean, Arboreal, he had his own vision. He was doing this to advance mankind.
It was a very hippie sort of thing to just, basically bring on enlightenment.
But Barry's kind of, you can't say he's a failure in his experiment. He's just kind of a missing link
Well, yeah, a lot of
in the
them were.
evolution. What's that?
The experiment itself. I thought you meant his experiments. Okay.
Right. Barry himself is kind of a missing link or just a bridge to get to. So he has to
He
sit
was
there.
arguably just as successful, just in the opposite direction.
Well, if you think about the opposite direction, you think about the Campbell, story, and he doesn't talk about someone going to the belly of the whale and coming the hero coming out a demon.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened here.
Well, that's like I was saying, the point of the movie. They both go through the same trauma. He gets completely broken.
Yeah.
She ends up with superpowers.
True. She becomes the Superman.
So I think that is kind of, it's well, I'll get don't want to tip my what have I learned, but that I think is the point of the movie, is that they both had the same experience and it had vastly different effects on them.
Or he was a guy off his meds.
Well, yeah, he was off his meds, but he was on the meds because of that experience.
Well, yeah, he's broken.
So Arboria dies. She finally escapes, or begins making progress on the escape, because she tried to escape earlier, but she was put out by the pyramid, and then she was injected, which becomes important later. You think they're just giving her a sedative? They actually chipped her, which you find out when Barry finds out that she escaped and goes to hunt her down. But she first has to make her way through the asylum, or
I didn't, you
institute.
know what? I didn't pick up on that's when they chipped her. I just assumed they chipped her from the beginning.
Yeah, I didn't notice it till this time.
Huh.
Apparently, some people on the forums mentioned you could see a red glow on her neck. I never noticed. I still haven't noticed that.
Wow.
But I just figured this time that was when she got chipped. So she has to make her way out of the institute, past the sentinels, which what you think are just giant robots, until you see one of them with their helmet off.
Very black hole.
Yeah, they're big. Basically, they look like giant bikers.
Yeah.
But then you see one with the helmet off, and it has a child's face.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like a sculpted out of plastic child's face. And you, in the drawings earlier, you see this person with the, with sort of armor on them and these mechanical things grafted into them. And you realize that was the diagram for the Sentinels. Sentinels.
And then what about the mutant that she stumbles upon?
She's going through this hallway to get out, and she happens upon this guy laying there, wrapped in something. He leans his head up, and he. How do you
I
describe it?
at first thought that was Barry.
Mm.
I had thought Barry had just deteriorated that far and that fast, and he was just out of his mind entirely. But then you realize he's another experiment
He's a
that
failed experiment.
a
A
real
truly
failed
failed experiment.
experiment, yeah.
Think Nosferatu.
Yeah.
He tries to stop her. And at this point, and this is where it gets a little interesting, a little more interesting. She manages to turn off the pyramid with her powers.
Yeah, she defeats the pyramid.
And then there's been speculation that when Arborea died, he transferred knowledge to her, particularly the schematics of the Institute, and it somehow increased her powers. Now, the increase in powers I can see because she died. Rather, he died.
And she can get the energy psychically.
Well, either getting the energy cyclically or just the emotional burst. A lot of, with the claims of psychic powers, they tend to come with intense at times of intense emotion.
Right.
And I also think that explains why she finally escaped. I think she didn't really try to escape in the past because she knew her father was there. Now that he's dead, she has nothing to lose.
And that there was just no getting out for her, ever.
Yeah. And also with him gone, she's pretty much dead.
And so when she's sneaking out, and they hadn't been at this color in a while, but the red comes back from the beginning.
Right.
So there's going to be a confrontation soon that they're building up to.
And as this is happening, we cut back to Barry, removing his, as his wife calls them, appliances.
Yes! What the fuck was that?
Well, it was a wig and colored contacts.
You're not wearing your appliance.
Well, he takes off the wig, he's bald, takes out
Right.
these contacts, which were oddly painful to remove, which contacts shouldn't be. And he's got, well, I saw it as black eyes. You said they were green?
Well, when he first took them off, they were the eyes from Dune, where they were black
Okay,
with all blue around them.
I didn't notice. Okay.
And then yeah, they and then at later when he was completely enraged, they were glowing green.
Okay. Like, I am gonna have to watch this thing again. He also puts on leathers, which
Yes.
was the odd thing. And for me to say it's the odd thing in this movie is saying something. But he gets in this leather suit because taking off the appliances, and his wife asks him about it, and he says he's tired of wearing them, which is kind of logical when you have to hide who you are.
Yeah.
But why was putting on the leather part of that? And he kind of moans when he's putting on the leather, which was a little over the top for me.
Oh, he did a lot of stuff that was just over the top with like his finger and whatnot throughout the movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, he takes the Jeffrey Combs Award, definitely.
Oh my God, yeah.
But it gets very sexual when he starts putting on the leather.
Yeah.
And he breaks out this knife called the Devil's Teardrop, which I want. Big ass hunting knife with brass knuckles in the handle. He doesn't know that Elena escaped at this point, as far as we know. So he's just getting into the leathers and grabbing the knife for no apparent reason. Or, as far as we can tell, no apparent reason then.
Yeah, it's tough.
Because what you find out is he doesn't know she's escaped. He's just snapped.
Yeah.
He has let the monster out. So he kills his wife, saying he's seen the eye of God, referring to the trip.
Of course.
He kills his wife, drives to the Institute with the knife in the leather, presumably to kill Elena.
Yeah.
At least that's how I interpreted it.
Yeah, he was ready to just end it all, you know?
Finds out she escaped, goes hunting her down. Meanwhile, she's making her way through the asylum. And there were some people on the forums who claimed that there was humor in this movie. There was only one spot that I thought was humorous. Just before she gets out of the building proper, she finds her way into the break room.
Yes.
And it is a very typical office break room, couch, fridge, TV. And it's such a stark contrast from the rest of the Institute that it is kind of funny.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely there for a good laugh.
They just could have turned the music up a little louder just to really hammer it home. So she gets out into this enclosed garden. Barry is now in his car hunting her down. He turns, he has a conversation with his former self, with all the appliances on. To let you know that he is completely snapped.
Oh, right. But he tells himself that he's doing good, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gives himself a little pat on the back.
I like how he's handling this.
Then he chases her down to this wooded area outside of the Asylum Institute. I keep saying asylum. Same difference, I guess.
Yeah.
And there are these two metalheads partying right outside of the Institute. Basically just two guys having a woods party, listening to some Venom, I think it was. The only thing that really would have tipped me off that it was a modern movie, because I recognized one of the guys, the heavier of the two Heshers, as they're called in the credits, metalheads.
Oh, yeah.
Was Chris Gaudier, who was a regular on Eureka, and I've seen him in a few other things. Only person I recognized in this movie who I'd seen before.
But they had it so perfectly. I mean, one of them wearing, like, a mullet and, you know, the mustache. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like I looked back in those days. Barry, for some reason, thinks that the metalheads had raped her.
Yeah. I don't know what would have given him that idea, which I guess would prove that he didn't have psychic ability.
Well, true. And as you said, and I guess you didn't mean this as intentionally as you did, as I thought you did, he turned into a green-eyed monster.
True. Yeah, that is true.
Pure jealousy.
Yeah.
No one else could have her. So he brutally murders the metalheads, basically putting a knife through their heads.
It's the most brutalist murder of the entire movie, actually.
The only other gore in the movie is the nurse's head exploding, and you just kind of see a little bit dripping from her eyes.
That's, you know, a couple seconds.
Yeah.
But this actually, on the nicest guy in the entire movie, too.
Yeah.
The heavier set metalhead,
mm-hmm,
is the one that the camera stays on and you really see get killed,
mm-hmm,
which I thought was a really interesting choice to have done.
And then he finds Elena. And this is where it gets a little controversial.
You know what, though? It's not. And you know why?
Well, I controversial in the sense that there is a lot of debate about what happens when he finds Elena. People love it or hate it. Which is a general theme with the movie in general. You love it or hate it.
But you know it's not going to last. The confrontation is not going to last long.
No.
It's... come on. Mm-hmm. I mean, I only see this once. But it was obvious in the build-up to it that the resolution was going to be very fast. This isn't like last week's movie where there's a build-up and you're expecting, you know, a resolution to last a while.
The last three movies we've talked about, we've complained about the endings.
But this, you can see it coming from a mile away that the resolution is going to be very fast. And you know why? Because she's so much better than he is.
That's the point. Just to explain what we're talking about, like I said, no spoilers. We're not holding anything back this week.
Yeah.
He finds her, he's talking to her, trying to convince her to come with him, to come back to the Institute. He steps towards her, stops. She kind of looks down a bit as he's talking to her. And he tries to walk again, His foot is trapped. He falls, cracks his head on a rock, and dies.
Yeah.
Now, it's not made expressly clear that she manipulated the branches and what have you around him to cause him to fall or to just trap him. Maybe he just happened to step into something.
Or he even thought he was trapped. Who knows? You
know? I'd like to think that she did it.
Of course she did.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason why he had the pyramid to shield them from him, because she would have fucking killed him through the glass.
That's the point. They're now out of the Institute on equal footing.
He is in that wheelchair, Blanche.
They're on equal footing out of the Institute without the pyramid, and she expends almost no effort in killing him.
Yeah.
And then she walks away towards the highway.
Because it would have been ridiculous. If there was like a big fight scene, you know, dramatic fight scene, that would have been silly, because it would have been, well, then what did he need the pyramid for and everything?
Exactly.
You know, you can't have like Hannibal Lecter, you know, locked up and bound up for like, and then he gets out and he's just like, oh, hi, everybody. You know, there's no, you know, he's all gentle.
Right. Yeah.
No. You have to construct a prison like that for someone that's going to fuck shit up through a wall.
And that's the interesting thing about the ending. And we'll get about... Did you see the post-credits scene?
Yes. Yeah.
We'll get to that. But the ending proper. She dies. She walks off towards the highway, towards this house with this glowing TV. People seem to think that there's a significance to the brightly glowing TV. I just think it's... She's going back to, you know, normality.
Back to normality. She's never experienced normality.
Well, that's true. She's going now she's going into the real world for the first time in her life, and she's 17 years old and immensely powerful.
Right.
Now,
with no social skills whatsoever.
This is the interesting thing that I just thought of after watching it this time. Because for most of the movie, you're on her side. You're pulling for her.
Yeah.
You want her to escape. You hate Barry. She's out. She is intensely powerful. No socialization, no idea of what she's going into.
Right.
And the thing about the two of them, they share, aside from the experience in 66, Barry and Elena share one thing in common. They have killed everyone that has gotten in their way. They both have.
Well, you know, because I was even wondering, you know, like, who was doing the killing in the earlier parts?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it was... A little like, wait a minute, who really is the bad guy here? And then it gets more clear as it goes on that it is, in fact, Barry that's being the manipulator.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Nurse takes the picture, she kills her.
Yeah.
Barry gets in her way, she kills him. Granted, she's only got two on her plate at this point, but...
But you get the feeling if Barry hadn't come after her,
mm-hmm.
she would have let him be.
Yeah.
Because...
She's only killed people who've gotten in her way, but so has Barry. Except for arguably Mrs. Arborea, Anna. We don't know why he killed her. Well, because he couldn't have her. That's why he killed her.
He was nuts.
Well, but he was insane, but the reasoning was he couldn't have her, so he killed her.
Because, I mean, why did he kill his wife? I mean...
That was the odd one, yeah.
Yeah, he did it because he could.
Yeah, true.
But where you get the feeling... is if she wanted to have killed him when she was out of that institution, she probably could have done it from across town.
Oh, yeah. To quote Firefly, I can kill you with my brain.
Yeah.
She was River Tam, for those who know Firefly. But and his death could have been accidental. I don't know if she intended to kill him or just stop him.
Oh, I think she, it was time. He was coming for her, and that was it.
Yeah.
You had your chance. Now go. You're done.
Mm-hmm. But okay, here's the hero of the movie, effectively, who is now a weapon released into the wild that she is not prepared for.
And that's sequels and remakes.
On to sequels and remakes. Well, before we get to sequels and remakes, the post-credit scene, just briefly. Okay, so credits roll. Then we cut to a Sentionauts doll. An action figure of the Sentionauts, which I wonder if they make because I want one. and you hear the same modem-y voice that you heard when he got the telephone call.
Oh, that's right.
And there's a lot of speculation about that, saying it came from some higher power, or that the whole movie was really just in somebody's head.
Oh, so
just
it could
a
have
kid
been,
playing with dolls.
It could have been them contacting him psychically, or of course, yeah, it could have been
someone
just in somebody's head.
Much more powerful, could have been just in Barry's head, but maybe the entire movie was just in somebody's head.
Did you catch the quote at the end of the credits?
Oh, yes, I forgot to mention that. I can't believe I forgot to mention that. End of the credits, the last line, wherever you go, there you are. Be
no
bonsai.
Matter where you go,
no matter where you
there
go,
you are.
Be bonsai. Which was just another reason for me to love this. He quoted Buckaroo.
Yes.
Okay, sequels and remakes.
That's it, right there. That's the sequel.
Yeah, yeah. And Cosmatos has said that he might do a sequel. He would like to do a sequel. Obviously, it depends on how well the movie does.
I mean, it's practically the movie Life Force,
but... Yeah, it is, really. good call.
But what the hell, you know? Yeah. Why not?
But not necessarily Life Force. I mean, I get the parallel, and I would it would be great if, you know, they'd give Eva Allen the same wardrobe. But it's not quite Life Force, because she was a vampire. She was malevolent.
Yeah.
She was out to kill. The interesting thing with this possible sequel is that Elena just has no idea what she's walking into.
Yeah.
She's just not prepared for the real world at all. And you have the wild animal walking into the populated area.
Who can pretty much just go off like a nuclear bomb herself.
Exactly. You're dropping a gorilla in a preschool.
That's a great way of putting it.
And that I want to see.
Yes. Make that movie. Make it
Please.
Now.
Starting.
Yeah, I can't believe.
I will donate.
I couldn't believe when I did look at the IMDb boards about people talking about when's this coming out and stuff.
Well, because, again, the trailer's been rolling around since March, and it was just a couple of months, maybe a couple months ago, put out on Netflix that I saw. It was in a lot of festivals for a long time.
Oh, okay, I see, because it did have an opening in May of this year.
One bit of trivia I wanted to, actually not trivia per se, but one thing I did want to mention, there was a comment on one of the YouTube reviews. I was also watching a bunch of reviews, like I said, trying to get as many other people's opinions about this to wrap my head
up.
And someone suggested that it could have been inspired by Project MK Ultra, which was the codename for a covert research operation experimenting in the behavioral engineering of humans through the CIA's Scientific Intelligence Division. Basically a super soldier program. Mind control, making them tougher for interrogations. I'll put a link to the Wikipedia article in the show notes. And I don't know if this was necessarily an inspiration. Had to have informed it, because there were a lot of cults in the 60s, but most of the ones that tried to improve humans through chemistry were government-run.
Yeah.
Oh, also, as a kid, Cosmatos used to frequent a video store entitled Video Addict. During these trips, he would frequently browse the horror movie section looking at the boxes. Although he was not allowed to watch such movies, he was too young. During such time, he would imagine what the movie was based on the cover art. And this was a big influence on Black Rainbow.
I remember doing that a lot, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, seeing the covers in the video stores, just like, oh, yeah, what's this one about? And then just coming up with it. And, of course, being wrong almost all the time.
But this idea coming from box covers is fascinating.
Yeah.
Especially if you look at the box cover for this, it really gives you a very different impression of the movie.
Yeah.
It looks like a straight-up horror film, which was clearly inspired by that.
And, you know, not many people actually get it in this, right? Like, I think the body count was, what, 5, 6 people?
Killed during the movie?
Yeah. It's a very low body count.
Arborea, the nurse.
Yeah.
And whether or not Arborea was actually killed is debatable.
I mean, he got put down.
Yeah. Well, he could have died naturally. He could have checked out naturally at that point.
Right. He very well could have.
The nurse. The wife.
The two metalheads.
The two metalheads. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, and Barry.
Yeah.
So it is a very low body count for what is effectively a horror film.
It's more of a potboiler, though. It's more of the psychological thriller.
It's sort of, it's sci-fi, it's a potboiler, it's in many ways a horror film, it's It's a genre bender, as one person said.
So,
okay,
are we
we've
at the
done
brain?
sequels and remakes. Yeah, we're on to Brains.
Because you can't remake this, I mean.
No, well, not yet. It's way too soon. And
right. It's not even out practically.
Yeah. 20 years from now, it'd be interesting to see someone try it. I don't know if it'd be successful.
To put it in this time period.
Ooh, that's interesting.
This is very fringe, this movie. You know, the more I think about it now, with the investing in the time period.
In the time period, and also the sort of LSD and technology mix.
And for those that are not familiar with Fringe, when Fringe, when the episode takes place in another time period, they change the intro to suit the time period.
Mm-hmm.
The style of the time, you know, like the 80s, it was very Miami Vice looking.
Another time period or another place, when they were in the other universe, it was blue.
Right.
As opposed to red, as it usually is.
Well, now it's like black with
barbed wire. Yeah, now it's black and white because they're in the far future.
Yeah.
Anyway, on to Brains.
On to Brains.
Like I said, I don't know if I necessarily enjoy the movie, but I respect the hell out of it. And it is brilliantly put together and incredibly effective, and I got to go 4.5. Because there are some flaws, but it's damn close to perfect.
I agree with you very much there. I have no idea whether I like this movie or not either. I do know that I have to see this again. Like, not just like, oh, yeah, someday I'll find... No, I've got to watch this movie again just to, like...
Wrap your head around it,
Yeah, wrap my head around it and catch some of it. And you got to respect this. And the stuff he does with color in this is just amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm actually going all the way for a 5 for now.
All right. So what have we learned?
We learned to not leave the house without your appliances.
And I learned that whatsoever doesn't kill you or turn you into a mutated psychotic killing machine only makes you stronger.
Oh, with some drugs.
All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing Return of the Killer Tomatoes, yes, the one with George Clooney, we need a palate cleanser.
Yes, we need a breather.
Go to zombietakeout.com, check out, of course, the album art, the episode description, the episode itself, which you're, of course, already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Google+, and Twitter. Of course, the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're looking to do up in, you know, for the next few weeks, it's established. Next 2, maybe 3 weeks.
Wow, we're going to take some Christmas time off
soon. Yeah, everything up through Christmas is established. Everything else is in no particular order. The request form, you can request a movie you'd like to hear us review. And, of course, the recommendations list. Every movie we've given 4 brains or better to collectively, this is going on it, obviously.
Yes.
You can also send us an email, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged.
They can fuck themselves.
414-368-9861. I haven't said this in a while, but of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee.
From the middle of Milwaukee?
Till then, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
That's very, very good. You know, this is always the highlight of my day.
I have a hard time with this guy's name. As a kid, Cosmo. I hate this name.